Welcome to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast, featuring advice and interviews about athlete branding. Learn how marketing, public relations, and broadcasting can grow your brand. We also have special episodes to talk about recent news, events, and anything in the world of sports. The podcast is sponsored by Pliable, a versatile marketing, PR, and broadcasting company that identifies opportunities and creates tailored content for its clients. Now it's time to roll. Here's your host, Greg Glenn.
Well, Darren Heitner is with us. He is the founder of Heitner Legal PLLC and an adjunct professor of sports law at the University of Florida Levin College of Law, an adjunct professor of NIL at the University of Miami School of Law, a certified arbitrator with the American Arbitration Association, and the author of many books published by the American Bar Association, including How to Play the Game, What Every Sports Attorney Needs to Know. He also has had many articles published in Forbes magazine, also Above the Law. He's a great asset and being able to educate people about name, image, and likeness. We welcome him here to the podcast today. Darren, welcome to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And as we get started here, one of the first questions I always like to ask our guests is, how did you first start working in sports, and when did you have this passion to do it?
The passion goes back many years. I think my father in particular always had a dream of his son working in sports. And at first, the intention was be a sports doctor. Very quickly learned looking at blood was not for me and pivoted. So I became very enthused about becoming a sports agent. In fact, in between my sophomore and junior years of undergrad, I had the unique experience and opportunity to work at a sports agency as an intern in Atlanta, Georgia, and left that 2 to 3 month internship going back to the University of Florida as a junior, very, very excited and interested in seeking to ply that trade and learn more. In fact, on December 31, 2005, as a New Year's resolution, I started a website called Sports Agent Blog because I was so infatuated with the space. I wanted to press myself to learn more, to meet important people in the industry. And going into law school, which was 2007, I actually started up my own sports agency from scratch. And believe it or not, I started it up with an individual who was writing for Sports Agent Blog with me as a contributor. I had never even met the person face to face. I would later on meet him. Right. And in fact, what's very interesting is here we are today in 2024, and he's actually a client of my law firm. But before going fast forward, I had started that agency and built it up for 3 to 4 years, including for a few months after law school, until I realized it was not for me and pivoted into practicing full time, even though I never thought I was going to be a practicing lawyer. When I pivoted, what was important was I had never burned bridges with, I guess, who you would consider to be competitors in the sports agency space, and initially focused very heavily on trying to convert those individuals who were once competitors into clients. And with a few clients and doing some good work for them, my practice very quickly grew. Not only was I representing agents, but also the clients that they represented, the athlete clients. I started to pick up some brands to represent them as well. And here we are, almost 15 years into practicing and celebrating the 10-year anniversary of my own firm in 2024. And it's a very robust practice of sports-related clients. It's not only sports, but there is a very strong focus.
Well, congratulations on 10 years and the success that you've had. So that's awesome.
Thank you.
Let's talk about NIL specifically, having been in the sports industry, having seen some of the clients you worked with. And when did you see this coming, and how much of a big scope of work that this could present?
Well, I don't know that I necessarily saw it coming. I can tell you very confidently that I had championed this effort for a very long time, whether it was writing on Forbes, where I wrote a sports business column for 6 years, or on Inc. magazine, where I think I was writing for about 4 years. or on social media, like my LinkedIn account or my Twitter account, which I've been very active on throughout the years, I have long made the argument that these human rights, if granted to all other individuals in the United States, that being rights of publicity, which we have abbreviated as NIL for name, image, and likeness, if those other individuals can benefit from it, then there was really no justification for the NCAA, a private association of member schools, to deny college athletes those rights. I had not done a lot of research at the time at the high school level. I actually was ignorant as to the fact that outside of California, high schoolers also were largely being denied by their respective high school athletic associations. And I'm a bit upset that in the efforts starting back in 2019, and believe me, these efforts started well before that, but when it picked up among states, that there wasn't more of a focus on the high school athletes as well. That's been corrected since 2021, and we have almost all states allowing for it. I think at this point, roughly 4/5 of the states allow high school athletes to benefit from their fame. But it was really 2019 when I saw the amazing effort of individuals in California leading up to Governor Newsom signing a piece of legislation that, albeit wasn't to go effective until 2023, that there was momentum. And then when I was asked by a state representative in the state of Florida, Chip LaMarca, and his legislative aide at the time, Corey Stanicia, to assist in efforts to do something similar in Florida, that's when I really thought, okay, this has a lot of steam behind it. We can do even better than what the people in California did. And I don't take away any credit from their amazing efforts. And so that's when it really hit me that this is a reality and this is an avalanche that's coming toward the NCAA. And the NCAA being who it is, I don't know if it really realized it, to be honest. What may be clear in support of that is that the NCAA didn't even change its rules, its bylaws, until the day before many states were going live in July 1, 2021. As far as what it would bring in terms of new business, it was never, I mean, some people believe Twitter is an interesting place to live on because you'll always hear the people clamoring about and saying, oh, this is all self-interest. To be honest, it was never at the front of my mind. And I had no appreciation for what it would or could do. In fact, leading up to July 1, 2021, I didn't really have any clients who were ready to pounce. I was referred to the Cavender twins, who I continue to work with today and have probably brought in the most amount of business for me and my firm. I was referred to them a week prior to NIL going live, July 1, 2021. So yes, it hasn't brought in business, of course. Am I thankful for that? 100%. But I didn't necessarily have an appreciation for how much business it would bring in.
Yeah, no, it certainly has grown quickly. And obviously, your work with the Cavender twins is very impressive. Really, as I like to say, kind of the two that really got the ball rolling. And obviously, they needed some counsel. And that's something that I've seen in my work is a lot of athletes, a lot of parents, a lot of schools, you know, have questions. And it seems as though they leaned on you probably pretty heavily to get the ball rolling.
Yeah, you know, I remember going back to June 2021, I was referred to the twins by a company that I had been doing some work for at the time, Icon Source, which was already doing work as a marketplace between brands and athletes for professional athletes, but was looking to enter into this new space as well, saw opportunity. And so I was helping them with the structure of some of their existing contracts to massage them in a way that would not run afoul of any existing state laws on the NIL standfront or with respect to NCAA rules and regulations. And they had brought together this massive first deal for their client Boost Mobile and the Cavender twins. And when it was brought to the twins, they really asked for assistance and requested of my client at the time, Icon Source, who can we go to? My name was recommended, I believe, among others. We had a Zoom with the parents of the Cavender twins. One of their sisters was managing them at the time, and so we spoke with them as well. And because there was a comfort level that was there and evident right at the start, we began working with each other. They didn't have an agency at the time. They even came to me for some recommendations. I gave them a few options, and they ultimately chose Everett Sports, and it's been a perfect fit there as well. But it's not just the Cavender twins. I've worked with so many different athletes since then, and so many athletes are transacting in this space who don't have any legal counsel. And it's a shame, because I've seen so many contracts after the fact, and oftentimes they're very one-sided.
Some of these partnerships that are taking place with brand ambassadors and influencers, where they're using promo codes, there isn't necessarily a defined number of posts. They're either getting incentives through like a discount, or they're maybe earning points to then earn, you know, a percentage off or money in some cases. To me, this is still a nil partnership. It's a nil deal, if you will. And this needs to be disclosed, but there's a lot of people doing these that I feel like aren't getting disclosed.
Well, I guess a normative question is there really a need for any NIL deal to be disclosed? You know, schools have set policies that the NIL deals must be disclosed. Certain states have had NIL laws on the books or still maintain NIL laws that have provisions that include a requirement of disclosure, but oftentimes leave it up to the schools to make a determination as to the window within which the deals must be disclosed and the process by which the disclosure occurs, whether it's the athlete communicating directly to the school or going through a third-party platform such as an Open Doors or an influencer, et cetera. The fact of the matter is, whether we're talking about affiliate marketing deals or, you know, pure endorsement in exchange for guaranteed dollars or royalties, many deals that are being entered into are never disclosed to the schools. And I'm not aware of a single instance where there's been any backlash on the athlete based on that. Sometimes it's purely because the school has no appreciation or knowledge that the deal's been entered into if there hasn't been an actual disclosure. It's very hard to keep track of everything that every single athlete does, particularly when compliance departments haven't necessarily been beefed up on a school-by-school basis. You know, the other thing is, even if they know, what's the incentive to take action against the athlete? If a school becomes extremely conservative and proactive in enforcing such a rule, I would think that that's an incentive for an athlete to either not commit that is considering that school or transfer away from that school, yeah, which tend to create an easier path toward the use of those school marks, because oftentimes the schools are cut in some way with respect to the revenues that are being received. So at its heart, what this is an intellectual property concern, whether or not the athletes have the right to use the names of the schools. And if there are certain circumstances where the name of the school may be used, where it's not creating a situation of confusion as to whether the school is endorsing or affiliated or associated with the endorsement itself, but instead you're just informing the public that this athlete is a member of the school. That's not a trademark use and not a concern. You know, other times also use of the logo, and sometimes schools even get so proactive and aggressive that they'll try to prevent the athlete or brand from using even the school's colors. And there's some interesting case law on that subject as well. Again, schools want to be very careful, because the more limiting they are in nature, perhaps the more that the school is dissuading the athlete from wanting to commit to or stay at the school. But at the same time, the schools do have a duty to enforce their intellectual property. And I think the easiest thing for the schools to do is to actually reach out to the brands that are a part of these partnerships with the athletes and flex some muscle there. because brands obviously should know better than many athletes who aren't really schooled and well versed with intellectual property law. And I think brands, depending on if they're delivering the content, have a lot more risk and exposure than the athletes themselves. But it's been an interesting space, and schools tend to be okay with licensing out the use of their names, their marks, as long as they're getting cut in, and as long as it's with a brand that's not going to dilute the school's brand and marks. And as long as it's not competitive, the brand is not competitive with one of its existing partners.
Yep. And I've seen that situation as well. I've had an athlete that had a deal lined up, and then there was a competing brand that was already serving the school. So let's talk, looking a little bit ahead here to the future. Wanted to kind of get a sense of what you think is the next step for NIL, and where do we go from here? Is it legislation? Is it more deals? There's now talk of a subdivision. Where do you see NIL going in the next, I know 5 to 10 is a long way off, but let's go at least, 2 to 4 years.
Well, unless there's a change with respect to the classification of college athletes, and in particular college football players, where they are finally classified as employees and are signing employment contracts that include restrictive covenants, perhaps even creating a unit, perhaps a union, and negotiating some sort of collective bargaining agreement with the schools, I tend to believe that the free market will guide where NIL goes in the future. And what the free market has essentially told us over the past 2.5 years, and particularly in the recent past, as NIL has really developed, and I should say NIL has with quotation marks, has developed with warp speed, is that the collectives, groups of boosters primarily, who are organizing their funds in one source, as well as the everyday fan who may have a subscription that is contributing to the pool of resources, that these collectives are really driving athletes to commit to schools, transfer away from schools, or remain at schools in lieu of transferring. And that this is really filled a vacuum based on the fact that athletes do not earn salaries. Yes, many of them are receiving scholarships. Some are actually getting as much as to cover cost of attendance. Many are not, particularly those who don't play college football. But despite that, fixing the compensation at scholarships or cost of attendance does not necessarily equal the true value of each individual player. And the marketplace is showing what that value is based on the arm's length negotiations between athletes, sometimes their representatives, and boosters and collectives on the other side. And sometimes even the schools are involved, whether they want to admit it or not. So I think that's really what we're going to see a continuation of, in addition with real NIL deals, whether it be with big brands like Gatorade, Cheez-It, et cetera, or your local regional brands like car dealerships. We're going to continue to see that as well. And those are the types of things that you will continue to see irrespective of whether athletes gain employment status. What we may see a real decrease of is the collective related activities if we go down that path.
The other topic that I always find interesting, I'm a big advocate for women's sports. Pliable has Mission E50. We will always represent more than 50% female athletes. What do you think the implications are here moving forward for name, image, and likeness, and how that might either help or hurt women's sports at the college level?
Well, I've sort of had a bird's eye view on the women's sports side. Outside of the Cavender twins, I've worked with many other female athletes as well, and I've seen real opportunity there. And even working, one of the brands that I've worked with is Gatorade, and Gatorade's been involved in signing multiple female athletes, even though its NIL roster is less than 10 athletes. So I've seen major brands. I've seen even collectives have a real focus on trying to provide for female athletes. I'm not naive. I understand that brands oftentimes see more value with the five-star college football players or the five-star college men's college basketball players. But the very intuitive, smart brands also see immense opportunity with female athletes. And so, I've reviewed various data, which actually tends to show that there's very little disparity between female athletes at large and male athletes at large. Oftentimes, the media is so hyper-focused on the very select few standout players at the men's basketball level and the college football level, but forget about all those other players who aren't as marketable and also aren't as valuable from a collective standpoint. And so when you take a step back and you look at the ecosystem at large, female athletes tend to be doing quite well, and I think that's going to continue to occur. And I'm generalizing here, but they typically do a better job at the social media work, whether it be on TikTok or Instagram. Their content tends to be much more compelling. They usually do a better job of interacting with their fan base. And various other for various other reasons, they're doing very well at large.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also to the growth of women's sports, we're going to start to see that. Obviously, the Professional Women's Ice Hockey League now. We've got the WNBA that's growing and surging because of, people like Caitlin Clark and the ability for more publicity to be around these women's sports. I really see it as a huge opportunity, a door that has been busted open with name, image, and likeness. I've always said now, women who have been the underdog actually have an opportunity to promote themselves, and we're going to start to see more brands investing in women's sports, and I think it's going to be great for these female athletes. So, but there will obviously be Title IX implications as we go forward. I know that that's been a hot topic as well, but we'll see how that all plays out. Talk to me, Darren, about some of the things you have coming up, next big thing you're working on.
Oh, I take it day by day. With my practice, at any given time, I have pending arbitration matters. I have litigation at the state and federal level, and across all industries. It's not just sport. And then always transactional matters and copyright, trademark, et cetera. So, I'm not necessarily a big picture or a 1, 3, 5 year down the road kind of guy. I'm just all about taking it day by day and getting solutions for my clients when they ask for it. And being the best dad that I can be as well with 2 kids under the age of two.
Yeah, there you go. That's a handful in itself. I know. And wanted to talk about one last thing here is, as you look back at the work that you've done, and will continue to do, in your mind, what is maybe a good piece of advice for these athletes right now that are either in high school, they're in college, they're thinking about maybe going pro, or maybe they're just thinking about getting into the nil space? Some advice you might be able to lend to them.
I think from my perspective, what I would say is very important is to scrutinize every single instance that you may believe is an opportunity. That quality is always much more important than quantity. There is such a thing as oversaturation, and you shouldn't necessarily agree to everything that comes your way. Importantly, don't enter into any transaction without some form of written agreement. If it is in the form of, let's say, a letter of intent or a memorandum of understanding or a term sheet, make sure it says that the terms are binding on the parties. And do your best to understand what's written. I mean, even if you're going to just sign on the dotted line, which I don't recommend, having an appreciation for the written words is of penultimate importance. Having an appreciation for the documents that are being entered into is just so important, and I think very much undervalued right now.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And I always try to educate athletes as well that it is important that we have understanding, because that's when miscommunications can happen if it's not in writing and there was one email and then you can't find it and everything else. So I appreciate you mentioning that and joining us. Also want to make sure you get out there, how people can get in touch with you, Darren. So go ahead.
Yeah, I'm very active on social media. It's my name, Darren Heitner, DarrenHeitner on X, formerly known as Twitter. My name on LinkedIn, where I actually have a newsletter that goes out every Friday. It's free. It's called Newsletter Image Likeness. And if you want to reach me via email, it's my first name, Darren at HeitnerLegal.com. And thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And I read the newsletter every week. It's great. That's how I found you, and continue to keep up with you and everything that you've got going on. So thanks again. And thanks for educating and empowering athletes.
You're very welcome.
All right. That is our guest, Darren Heitner. I am Greg Glenn. We're glad you could tune in, and stay pliable, my friends.
Thanks for listening to the Athlete Brand Advisor Podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes from today's episode and catch up on recent episodes at pliablemarketing.com. We also encourage you to share topics and guest ideas by emailing our production staff at pliablemarketing@gmail.com. We love hearing from our loyal listeners and athletes who want to grow their brand. So jump in and be part of the podcast, because that's how we roll.